And good morning, everyone. Good morning, everybody online. It's lovely to meet some people for the first time. And it's also lovely to see people I haven't seen for a long time, to see people I didn't expect to see people online, some of whom I know, some of whom I don't. So a big hello to Sister Gloria, and lovely to know that you're online joining us as well this morning. So we bring our love to you from Ashby Ecclesia, the deep south, as we would call it from here. There are a number of brothers and sisters who you may know there, and we have also some Iranian brothers as well as part of our Ecclesia family, and I know they'll be thrilled to know that we've been with you today. I thought that we would take some thoughts for exhortation this morning from our reading that we've had together in the week. So perhaps if you were following the reading plan, you may have been reading from John 9. So thank you, Jeff, for reading, having that read for us, and thank you, Hassan, for reading. It's a chapter where we're introduced, as we are so often in John, to somebody with a lot of detail. In the other Gospels, we often meet people that Jesus interacts with, and we have virtually nothing about them. We just have a passing mention of a miracle being done. We don't know anything particularly about them. But this is an example in John 9, where we've got really a whole chapter, 40-odd verses, about one incident. And we're introduced, and in some depth, to a story about this blind beggar and the situation all around him. We don't know his name. It may be that he eventually was to become an important or well-known person, perhaps in the first century church. We don't know. But he appears to be, as a story, it appears to be something which is very significant given the amount of time and space which John gives to it. It's full of interesting details. And what I'm hoping that we might do today is just think about this miracle and find some encouragement for us as we think about a man who goes from being a beggar with very little prospects in life to a man now fulfilled with a whole life before him. A man who was blind, who by the end of the chapter sees. A man who didn't know who Jesus was, but ultimately has a belief in him. So in a way, it's a chapter that tells us a story of a man's development, his growth in his faith and understanding. And maybe as we think about this, we can see how it relates to our own lives and our own development. Because we've all been or are still on this journey of getting a better understanding of who Jesus is. At first, he was somebody who we didn't know, and gradually we get a sharper and clearer picture of who he is, to the point where our lives are changed, completely changed. And that's how it is for this man. His life at the beginning as a blind beggar, his life at the end as a man who can now see, and a man who believes, and a man whose life is completely transformed. So what I want us to do, we've got, I think, about 5 points which I want to try and bring out from thinking about this chapter and looking at his life and see what it is that we can take from it that might be useful for us. So let's begin at the opening verses where we read about Jesus passing by. And in fact, sometimes we have to forget where chapters start and end, don't we? And look at the whole context and the whole story. You see, chapter 8 ends with Jesus passing by. Jesus has been in conversation with the Pharisees, with the religious experts, as they thought saw themselves. And Jesus, the whole of chapter 8 is a long conversation. And if you look at chapter 8 and back at verse 12, we can see one of the key things that John records for us, where Jesus is trying to explain to people who he is. And in verse 8, Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not be in darkness, but have the light of life. So sometimes I think when we read through John, and I know we're not completely through John, it's just so helpful to see how John has woven together so many themes that fit together, where the miracles or the teaching that Jesus does sits with what has gone before, what's about to come. So he's been with religious people, and he's ultimately at the end of almost a futile conversation where they just don't understand what he's saying. And Jesus passes by them. He's told them that he's light, and he's passing by them. But he's now coming to a man who is blind, and Jesus is passing by him. And his life is about to be changed. This idea of Jesus passing by is an interesting one, isn't it? For all of us, we all have our own story to tell of how Jesus has passed by in our life, in our families, in our community. And we don't always know how these things have come about, the chain of circumstances that brought about Jesus passing by in our life. Somebody introduced him to us. His name was suddenly given to us. Somebody, somewhere, has helped us understand who this man is. And interestingly, it's a conversation that Jesus is drawn to the man because he's asked by his disciples in the opening verse of chapter 9. There's a blind man by the side of the road, and it was generally accepted that if there was a man that was suffering so much, he must have done something wrong to be suffering so much. Or maybe his family had done something wrong, and that's why he's suffering so much. And the answer that Jesus gives is actually one that flattens that idea. Jesus said it's got nothing to do with whether this man's done anything wrong or not. This man's here, and I'm passing by at the right time. The man is in the right place because I'm here. And I am going to work a work that will change his life, and perhaps it will help change the lives of others, because they're going to see what I can do. Because remember, I'm the light of the world. There were the religious leaders and the so-called experts who were blind to who Jesus was. This man was physically blind. But Jesus was going to demonstrate just what you can do that can help somebody who can't see, see. And that's the journey that we've all been on. At some point, we couldn't see. We didn't know. We hadn't experienced who Jesus was. But somehow, God's plan and purpose meant that in our family, or in our own personal experience, Jesus has passed by and is looking for those who will respond to him. I think it's one of the reasons why it's helpful for us all to share our own stories with each other. How our lives and our families' lives have been transformed because Jesus has passed by and someone has stopped and helped us understand who he is. We know the story then, having read it, either in Farsi or in English, that the story continues, that Jesus is going to intervene. Because it says in verse 6 that when Jesus had said this thing, that he is the light of the world, he's repeating what he said that we saw in chapter 8. I'm the light, and I can help those who are in the dark place to see. So it says that when he has said these things, he does something. He spits on the ground and he makes clay with his saliva and anoints the eyes of the blind man with the clay and tells him to go and wash in the pool of Siloam. Now, we know enough from when we read the Gospels that Jesus needed to just say the words. He didn't need to do anything. He could have just simply said. It's happened elsewhere. It's recorded elsewhere in Scripture when people came and wanted the Lord to help them or to help their family. He could just speak the word and the individual was healed. But Jesus goes to some length, doesn't he? He does something which is very visual for those who were looking. And the fact that John has recorded this detail means perhaps that we're encouraged to think, why is Jesus doing this? Well, I'm sure we've got all sorts of ideas of why Jesus did this. So let me offer a couple of thoughts. The first thing perhaps to say is, did you notice when you read it through that in the chapter there's a reference to the clay 5 times? It keeps emphasizing the clay. The clay. He made clay. He put it on my eyes. It's not just a passing thing that Jesus did it and it mentions it once. It mentions it 5 times. Now maybe there is some emphasis then that's been given by John as he records this. Now we know, of course, if we just think about the idea of clay, we go right back to the book of Genesis, when man was made from the dust of the earth, from the clay, as it were. We were made out of clay. So maybe we've got something here that John is capturing for us, that just as we are made from the dust of the earth, that Jesus can intervene and make a new man with clay. He can just use the basic of resources, and by his intervention, he can bring about a man who can see, a man who is going to have a new life, the man that's born of clay, who then is sent to go and wash in the pool of Siloam. But we can see the parallel, can't we, with what we're required to do. Men and women of clay who are called to go and wash in the water of baptism, that we might become a new creature. Maybe it also at a practical level. Remember, this man has not seen Jesus. And I just kind of offer the thought, really, that as we read the chapter, Jesus does something to his eyes. So maybe he's explaining, and the man would feel something on his eyes. And know that, understand what Jesus is doing. We read about him healing those who are deaf when he touches their ears. So there is maybe something physical which is happening. But the man has never seen Jesus. He doesn't know what Jesus looks like. He is sent to the pool of Siloam, and it tells us that he's told to go to the pool of Siloam. And so he goes and washes. And we're told that it's when he washes that his eyes are open. So does that mean that he still hasn't seen Jesus? It's not until the conversation later in the chapter, when Jesus speaks to him and has to say to him, I'm the one. That's the first time that he's seen Jesus. So at the beginning, his eyes are being touched, the clay is being provided, but he had never seen Jesus. It's only his journey of faith, the next step of being obedient to the washing, going and washing in faith. So when we think about the man's steps, it's quite a thing, isn't it? He's never seen Jesus. The man's put clay on his eyes and he does what he's told. Whether he navigates by himself or with others through the winding streets to get to the pool of Siloam, but he goes in faith. He does what the Lord commands. And as a result, he can now see. Baptism, of course, is spoken of. Acting and walking in faith, perhaps, is alluded to. And of course, what then happens, and it's interesting, isn't it? When this has happened, and we saw this for those of us who were here or speaking about this yesterday. When the conversation happens about it, verse 10, the people said to him, "How were your eyes opened?" He answered and said, "A man called Jesus made clay, anointed my eyes, and said to me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed, and I received my sight." And they said, "Well, where is he?" And he said, "I don't know." It's this journey that we're all on, isn't it? Of discovering, where is Jesus? Who is Jesus? What is Jesus doing? And I think as we grow in our faith, we become clearer in those things. But at the beginning, when we first step out, we may not know all that we'll ever know about Jesus. We start a journey and begin to build as we learn and draw closer to who he is, what he taught, what he said. The third point is that this coming to a faith, impacting on other people, it wasn't all in isolation. And I think all of us would say, no matter when we were baptized, we're continuing to learn more about who Jesus is and how he is impacting on our lives. The people around this man were also being impacted. So when we turn to obey Jesus, the people around us are impacted. The neighbours were impacted. His family were impacted. The Pharisees, clearly, were impacted. And the whole of the chapter, there is so much conversation as they're all wrestling to try and understand. And it's another example where we read about there being division between the people, arguing about what did this man do? Oh, you weren't really blind. It's another example that we see a few times in John of the division which is caused as people wrestled with trying to understand who Jesus is. Hence, Jesus keeps telling us, "I am," etc. And John keeps highlighting, "These are the signs that you might know who he is." And here, in this chapter 9, it's a real example of how people dispute the facts of what has happened, as well as what those facts mean. And it's no different today. People will dispute who Jesus is. Did he really exist? Did he really do these miracles? And people will dispute what those facts mean. So our growing conviction of knowing that these things that we read in the Gospels really happened. Jesus really did come to this earth and do these things. He really did make the blind to see. And we also know what that means. So the neighbours struggled. The Pharisees were divided, it tells us, verse 13. They brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees, and it was the Sabbath when Jesus had done this. There's another reason for their uproar that Jesus had performed the miracle on the Sabbath day. One of seven miracles that we have recorded that Jesus did on the Sabbath. So he says the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. And he says he put clay, it's one of the other times he put clay on my eyes. When we turn to give our faith to Jesus, people will often, I think, ask us questions. They will dispute the fact of, well, tell us more about it then. Why have you suddenly become who you are? And we need to be ready, because we know how this man has changed our life. And this is what this man has to keep answering, whether it's his neighbours or his family or the Pharisees. He has to keep telling them, Jesus has passed by and he's impacted my life. And what I know is I can see. I don't know everything, because even at this point, he hadn't actually, I believe, seen Jesus with his own eyes. But it's a growing conviction And the more the man is asked, it's as if we get that sense of the more he's at the end of his tether. I've told you, this is what has happened. And of course, his parents have the same problem, and they say, look, he's old enough, you go and ask him. There's just this growing dispute. Who is Jesus? Has he really done these things? So for you and I, among all the noise, we have to focus on the facts of what is true. And the man says, all I can tell you is that I was blind and now I can see. You and I don't know everything. We're growing in our faith, we're developing our insight, we're appreciating more about Jesus's. And although we can't answer every question, we know enough to know that we were blind, but now we can see and we know who he is. The fourth point is how this man had to be prepared to consider considerable loss because of the decision which he had made, to stand up for what he knew to be true. It ultimately seems to climax in him being removed from the synagogue. It tells us he was cast out. Now, in my Bible at margin, it says he was excommunicated down there in verse 34. You were born in your sins and you're teaching us, and they cast him out. That would have had an impact on his family too, I'm quite sure. But there's growing hostility towards him. They reviled him, it says in verse 28. You're one of his disciples, but we follow the words of Moses, said the religious leaders. So I think for some of us, we have to appreciate, and some of us will have, experience that because we've set our allegiance to following the Lord Jesus, that might mean that others will have a disparaging attitude. They will look down on us. They will dismiss us. They will think we are crazy. They'll think we've been cheated in some way, that we have now decided that we will turn and follow Jesus. And I'm sure as he faced those questions and the attitude of the religious leaders that was shown towards him, it will be hard to appreciate how lonely he may have felt. Maybe he even questioned, the day that Jesus gave me sight has brought me so much trouble. All of the community seem to be turning against me because I'm now saying what has happened to me. We have to be ready, don't we, and encourage one another. It's one of the reasons why I think the value of meeting together is reminding ourselves that each of us have seen Jesus. We each of us know that Jesus is who he claims to be. He has brought light into all of our lives. So whilst this man may have felt very lonely and isolated at first, and the hostility of those around him, there were others who had also seen the light. And I like to think that he found comfort by being with them and having encouragement from them too as his life continued. He didn't need to beg anyone, but I wonder how many people were ready to employ him because of what he had done. It wasn't suddenly life was easy because he turned to Jesus. He faced different challenges now, but he wasn't going to face them on his own. He was now part of a growing number who could see that Jesus was the Son of God. He made a personal choice that he was now going to follow. And it brings us to our closing points, really, because the chapter began with Jesus passing by, intervening, giving the man light in his life that he could see. the man then goes through all of the challenges, questioning his honesty, questioning the validity of what he did, questioning what was true and what was false, accusing him of many things, accusing his family. But then it says in verse 38, Jesus heard that they cast him out. So the great thing is that even though others may turn on us because we've turned to Jesus, Jesus knows. His Father knows. And it says that when Jesus heard that they had cast him out, Jesus went and found him. Jesus is looking for those who are struggling because of their faith, because of their desire to speak the truth concerning Jesus. I think that's a thing of great comfort for all of us. If people are making our life hard because of our trust in Jesus, Jesus still finds us out. And I think he's found us out today. Where two or three are gathered together, he's there in our midst. He's still the light. He's the bread. He's in our midst. He's ensuring that we need not feel that we are left alone. And here's why I think that he had not seen Jesus till this point. Because in the conversation, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" says Jesus. And he said, "Who is he, Lord, that I might believe in?" He didn't say, "It's you." Because now he was seeing Jesus, I think physically for the first time. And Jesus says, "You see him. And it's the one that's talking to you now." So what does the man say? "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped him. So the chapter that began with a man who was blind and who was begging, who had no prospects, is now a man who can see, who believes, and worships. It's a man whose life has been transformed. And maybe in our own personal faith journeys, we can see something of ourselves, our lives changed, and that we can now see. So, this morning, he's searched us out. He's bringing and reminding us of the light that comes from letting him work with us. Just as we said yesterday, he could work with a few barley loaves to feed a multitude. He could work with some saliva and clay and help a man see. He can help us see if we come to him in our belief and worship him. So our prayer this morning, as we share the bread and sip from the cup, we're reminded of what he has done for us. The people he calls his friends, the one that he was willing to lay his life down for. And even though as we get older, our eyes get a bit dimmer, our prescription glasses get a bit thicker, maybe. The print seems to get smaller when we try and read it. Maybe as our physical eyes weaken, our spiritual eyes can get sharper. Isn't that wonderful? And what it means, perhaps, is that no matter how many times we've shared bread and wine, each time we do it, and even today as we do it, we just might see the Lord a little clearer. Know that he's close by. Knowing that when we say to him, "Lord, I believe," and we worship, because he is the light of the world that brought light into our life when we were once